You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, at least that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I welcome renowned photographer Scott Wilmer to the program. Scott has been a wrestling photographer for over 30 years. He started off shooting pictures at WWA events and went on to shoot pictures for Big Book of Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and Gong Magazine. Scott Wilmer, welcome to OWW Radio.
David, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm quite honored to be your guest today.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the program. How's 2015 treating you so far?
Oh, it's been great. We've been consistent with our work, and, I'm not having to work a real job, and that's basically what my goal is. I haven't worked a real job since the 80s. So I'm making my living still as a photographer and occasionally photographing wrestling and doing lots of boxing and instant prints at reunions.
Now, I met you at the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion the past several years. I'll see you at the 50th next month, correct?
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss this one for the world.
For those who aren't as familiar with the CAC, what does the organization mean to you?
Well, it preserves the legacy of the old school wrestling when we had territories. Actually, the complete history and in my industry that I have made a profession as well as with professional wrestling is boxing. And one of the founding fathers was Archie Moore and Iron Mike Mizuki, who was a wrestler and then got into show business. So it means a lot to me in preserving the memories of professional wrestling, and I do that by my photography, by taking pictures of the honorees and donating them to the Cauliflower Alley Club each year and letting them do what they want to do with them.
Well, I want to thank you for that because we do get great photos from you every year from the reunion. And by the way, Scott, I'm glad you brought up boxing as well because the Cauliflower Alley Club was started to support wrestling, boxing, and film stars. Over the years, it's kind of transformed a little bit to be mostly professional wrestling, but there's still that history with the club, right?
There certainly is. A couple years ago, Morgan Dollar brought in
Grizzly Adams.
Yes, Grizzly Adams, right. And, when you're in the business long enough, you end up meeting people in TV production, which leads you to meeting major Hollywood stars. Well, that's what happened to me, and I'm sure that anybody that's been in the business, that's been behind the scenes, has been able to experience that.
What was the first year you went to the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion? Do you remember?
The 2011 one, I think it had Roddy Piper, a lot of tuxedos there, and it was a wonderful experience seeing old friends that I hadn't seen in 30 years, and I continue my friendship with them. Trevor Blanchard's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, I think, four people from the WWA that are coming. That's the World Wrestling Association, started by Jim Barnett and then owned by Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder. So mm-hmm. I was one of the wrestlers slash managers for his program. We're going to have Dr. Jerry Graham, the most intelligent wrestler in the world, the most educated wrestler in the world. We'll have Jose Martinez, El Bracero. If anybody watched Detroit wrestling back in the Sheik days, El Bracero was a Mexican superstar for the TV program. Greg Lake, who was our version of the Patriot, and also Greg Lake has stories of wrestling Bruiser Brody, and of course myself. And it's just going to be so good to see everybody together at one time that I haven't been with for in the dressing room for nearly 30 years.
Well, I'm glad you're going to be able to make it. It's incredible. The tickets are already sold out, the big 50th reunion of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Looking forward to seeing you there. And, I read, Scott, that you are noted for having one of the largest collections of sports photos in the world. Is that true?
I think maybe at one time. And, being in the wrestling business, I think there's somewhat of a gypsiness in me. And with each move, things tend to disappear, or each psycho girl you go out with, something else is missing. I do have quite an interesting collection, but there's a lot of stuff that unfortunately is missing from my history.
So for someone who has achieved, though, the recognition you have in photography, how did you get interested in becoming a professional photographer?
I always had a fascination with cameras. As a kid, I mean, we're talking about 7, 8 years of age, and any time I saw someone with a camera and all those buttons, I always wondered, how could this guy remember all this? And I first saved up bubble gum wrappers and got a roll film camera from Bazooka, and then my first real camera, I can't say a real camera, but Kodak started making Instamatics. And at 9 years old, I had one, and I would sneak up at Dick the Bruiser shows, take a picture behind the cops, do it very low-key, and eventually I'd get caught, I'd get thrown out, and then I'd wiggle my way to the other side, I'd do the same thing, and all of a sudden, I've got some really good pictures, and I'd take them to the shows, and people would show them to the fans. You know how you have your clique of people you see at the show, and you can't wait to share your memories. And I brought the pictures, and they started buying them. Oh, I like that, and I started making a little extra money on the side. I did that for quite a while, and then my first big break was as a freshman in high school, when I photographed Dick the Bruiser versus the Sheik at Market Square Arena, and also Cowboy Bob Ellis versus Ox Baker. I took two wonderful shots with a 35-millimeter camera. I'm in the eighth grade, and Brebeuf, my high school I went to for 2 years, had a photo contest. I entered just those two photos, and they won first place in color and grand prize for the black and white. They were Sam Miniker, our announcer at the time, was so excited about that he told Dick the Bruiser, and they had me on TV showing the pictures. And from there was when my career took off. Then I got inside the ropes to take photos of the matches, all the matches. I was traveling with the guys as well as driving my own clunker and selling them to the magazines. I think Pro Wrestling Illustrated, their series of magazines, was the first article I got published. And then I started selling them to the other ones. They weren't paying as well, so I just kept with Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And I have to also mention Tom Burke's The Ring magazine and Norman Keitzer, The Wrestling News. Norman Keitzer would get a lot of stuff of mine. He had regional magazines and would use a lot of my stuff. And I was getting, $200 checks from Keitzer.
Wow.
So it was, this is early 70s. So I was able to make a living, living with mommy and daddy, and selling pictures at wrestling shows, and sometimes my pockets would be, completely full. I'd have money in my socks and my shoes, and I was doing that under the table until Dick the Bruiser got wind of it and said, from now on, I get 20%. And then that was my key to getting into the dressing room and hanging with the wrestlers. until they got paid. And Bruiser loved to make the wrestlers wait forever for their paycheck. He didn't care if they had a plane to match, to catch. If there was a separate room, they would stay in it. He and Wilbur Snyder drinking their Japanese beer, and they'd call wrestlers in one at a time. And I was always last to give Bruiser his 20% of what I made. And well, I also have to mention with me was David McLean. David McLean and I were big fans, and we would go to the shows together. We were just fascinated. We did a wrestling show in our high school using the stage and makeshift rings and ropes. Of course, they're going to break in the middle of it. But we had the kids believing that, you know, the kindergartners believing that it was real, and they were crying, you know. So it was a lot of fun, and we've been doing it ever since.
It's an amazing story how young you were when you got into this, and you mentioned how you always had a love for cameras, but there must have been, like you said, been a love for wrestling, too, because, you know, to take that and get so involved in professional wrestling, you must have been a big fan. What was the wrestling scene like, in addition to Dick the Bruiser and his shows, in the Indianapolis area where you grew up?
Well, the Dick the Bruiser was the only show in town.
Okay.
You had a commission that protected him, and it was territorial, and Bruiser had the, like the whole, you know, they wouldn't allow promoters to run anywhere in Indiana, and Bruiser had a piece of Ganya.
Wow.
Part ownership of the AWA until Ghani decided he didn't want to pay him anymore. And you also had Jarrett that ran in Kentucky in Evansville and on a handshake deal. They were paying Bruiser and Snyder for some of the gate receipts from Louisville and Evansville. Until the commission regulated wrestling and they considered it entertaining. And that was an appeal that Dick the Bruiser won for the state of Indiana way back in the early 80s.
It's an amazing story.
And, you know, Vince followed suit on that. You know, that's when wrestling became entertainment. But there was a 3-5% athletic tax. And, it, you know, it was Bruiser that was one of the pioneers in stopping the commission from calling it an athletic sport and taking their fee and having state people and ambulances and all that other stuff at ringside or at the ring. You know, that's one of their requirements. In fact, they could require you to get blood tests and AIDS tests. That's a good idea for boxing, but wrestling's fake. You don't need people from the commission approved, you know, which is usually somebody's friend, and who brings their friends, and they steal the ringside seats that the paying customers bought. You know, that's what the wrestling commissioners would do, and some states do have a commission. So, you know, I don't know why.
Martin,
you know, you're not supposed to get hurt. And you know, I talked to Honky Tonk Man. He's talking to me. You know, Bret Hart's talking how he likes to work tight, you know, throw a few potatoes. You know, who wants to get potatoed? Who wants to get hurt? You know what I mean? There's a longevity. Who cares? If it looks good, who cares, you know?
You were smartened up at a pretty young age. We were inside the dressing room. What was that like, being in the dressing room and feeling a part of the show?
Well, I had to do everything. You know, I was low key. I did everything low key, and that is one of the reasons for my success as a wrestling photographer. You know, as a wrestling photographer, you're not a wrestler, and you're not really. They don't consider you really in the business, you know what I mean? So that was a perfect outlet, and it gave me, you know, he's kayfabe, but he's okay. You know what I'm saying?
Huh.
Because he gets us pictures. So it gave me access to shows and doing things that normally you're either working with one group or the other. I worked for both WWF during their during the beginning of their invasion, and the St. Louis Wrestling Club, which was the like the capital of professional wrestling. That's where a lot of major titles changed hands, and that was my territory for both Gong Wrestling Magazine and Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So I had the inside scoop on both organizations. I worked with the WWF for several years. When I shot their shows, I kept low-key, and Stooge stuff never really came back. He's working with blah, 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 you know what I mean? Romer was there, you know what I'm saying? That never really got back to the other offices, and I did that for years, and WWF then, I was the only photographer that they would allow up at the ring and shoot through the ring like I do at Cauliflower Alley Club shows, because I was on contract with Gong Magazine, and none of my pictures from WWE matches appeared in United States magazines. Mine were all Japan, so I was not a threat that way. So they let me up. I shot, and their official photographer was Steve Taylor. I shot side by side with Steve Taylor. Now, did I go to the dressing room in WWE and do stuff where my nose really doesn't belong? No. But afterwards, of course, back in those days, everybody would meet at a bar, and I'd kibbutz at the bar, and you know, I've sat down with Pat Patterson, and he's seen my work on Bruiser's show. You know, they all, you know, whatever tape you've got, if there's ever any wrestling, I don't care what territory it is, some stooge or somebody will send a tape of that to the WWE for brownie points or thinking they're going to be able to get in. So he saw my work. I was offered a job with the WWF at the time. He knew what I was getting paid by Dick the Bruiser. He laughed at me. But I had just married Bruiser's daughter, and they wouldn't approve of my travel. This was 84. Now, my stories could sound like Brian Williams. They could sound interesting, but I could back every single thing up through documents and pictures, what I say. So this is a shoot interview. I'm telling the truth. There are some things I may not get into because it is hairy, what I've done or been able to do. Now, you follow. You're a follower. The Onita stabbing thing. You know, they're all speaking Japanese, and I'm shooting pictures of a contract signing. And there's the Onita and Gonzalez, and there's the fake fight. There's the gig on the forehead, and everybody leaves the studio. You know, it wasn't until after Gonzalez and all the Puerto Ricans left the studio that me and the Japanese press that was with us stayed, and that's when Onita started gigging his stomach like he had been stabbed. But all the Japanese press stayed back, and I was right up there on Onita taking pictures. Nobody else took those pictures, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
By the way, I don't know, maybe I jumped into the Onita stabbing angle too quickly, but I could get into that after. I just got excited talking to you, David. You're a very good commentator, and it's got my blood going.
Well, thank you for that. I did want to talk about your transition, though, because not only were you a photographer, you then did wrestle and manage when you were in the WWA. How did you make that transition?
You marry Dick the Bruiser's daughter and you become a wrestler, you become a grass cutter, you know, they try to turn you into a stooge. So I was dating Michelle at the time. His son, Carl, that's another story, but he was wrestling and he had the ring truck. He and Bruiser got into a fight and he dumped the ring in Bruiser's yard. And Bruiser had no one to clean it up, and he said, "Romer, can you take all the plywood and ring ropes and ring posts back into the truck?" Which was like an all day job for one person, you know what I mean? And voila! I'm the new ring truck driver and ring setter upper. And then you transition, no training whatsoever, but you do what you watched on TV, and you're the new kid in town, so you got to pay your dues, and you do your thing and get the shit beat out of you until you get respect, and then you're over. You know what I mean?
How did you like managing? Was it a lot of fun for you?
Oh, I loved it. You know, I loved it. You know, the first time you do something and you get a few ringside boos or whatever, but when the timing's there and you know exactly when to do it and you've got the whole arena booing at the same time. And back then he had some pretty good crowds. So I know what it's like to be booed with 3,000 or 4,000 people at the same time. You know what I mean? It's the greatest feeling in the world. And there's a few YouTube tapes of me wrestling, and you could probably see the build-up and then how the fans reacted when I got my, you know, time to get my ass kicked. I mean, they went absolutely wild, you know. And I sent you a couple of those bars out of both of us, you know, in a local regional area. Bobo Brazil Jr., who was Calypso Jim then, he's still on the circuit wrestling. He's in his 60s. He's a great guy. He's also a minister. Go ahead, David. Ask me some questions.
When you became more of an on-screen character, you went by the name of Saul Creechman, correct?
Yes, that is correct. You know, Eddie Creechman was the manager of the Sheik, and he was Jewish, and the Sheik was Palestinian, and boy, did they have heat. And I was blessed by both of them. By Dick the Bruiser calling me Saul Creechman and having the blessings of Eddie Creechman, they called me Saul Creechman. I was the nephew of Eddie Creechman. Eddie was trying to get his son Floyd and work with me as a tag team, and some of the boys in the dressing room that knew his son said, no, that wouldn't be a good idea because they said, frankly, he's just not a good worker. Mm-hmm. I don't know how good I worked, but I faked it good. You know what I mean? You know, you've got to do the expressions. And again, you learn if you do something tight or do something, a little stiff, you're going to pay for it 10 times over. Mm-hmm. So I learned quickly. And, there was like an initiation in a battle royal, you know, and here I am with 22-inch legs, white as a ghost, and, not knowing a damn thing. And one of the guys, I don't even remember who it was, but Jerry Valiant was in the ring, Jose Martinez, El Bracero, but every single person took the hardest chop they could at me. And my chest was trickling down. I remember my first match was a tag match. I was getting bulldogged and abused pretty good, and then I had to tear down the ring, you know. So it wasn't so fun. I thought I was going to die, but I stuck with it. And I didn't start really publicizing my work until Facebook came out. And the reason, one of the reasons that motivates me to put old stuff on Facebook, and they're usually pictures of me at an event or with somebody at an important event that I'm photographing, is because my father never paid attention to me. In fact, when people would ask what I was doing and I would tell someone my story, my dad would flat out say that I'm a liar. And we really don't talk that much, but I know that he trolls Facebook.
Wow.
And I see his name on there. I'm not even a friend of his. And he trolls Facebook, and he sees my stuff. And I know some of his friends come up to him, and they say, wow, your son did that? I didn't know that. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of, sickness in my mind. Of not really having a father, but right. Living with a father, but never even listened to any of my stories, and now he sees them. I've never got one single like, one message, or anything, but he does see them.
Wow, that's a pretty incredible story. I'm sorry to hear that. That's a tough situation.
Well, it's the truth, and you know, like I said, you're a good journalist. I've seen you in action, and if I'm going to spill the guts out, it might as well be with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, it is a real honor to have you on the program today. I did not realize, Scott, how far back your history in this business went, and what a period of time you got to cover, because you saw that transition from the territory days to the WWF at the time takeover, and you even got to, like you said, do the photography there in the St. Louis region. What were your thoughts at the time as you saw the business change? Did you think this was a good...
Again, I was there at the WWF first takeover, which they hit the St. Louis Wrestling Club. It was one of the capitals of wrestling, and that was the first one they ran their TV tapes and then invaded their territory. And my God, it was like the mafia was taken over, and I was being a part of this, you know what I mean, doing it low-key. I remember getting backstage at the Kiel Auditorium, because I got backstage when I was NWA, and they had the same cop working the little area. And I remember all the stooges, "You're going around back there," you know, and I, you know, creep back to the other side, you know. But that's what I mean. I kept things low key until I had so much power with the press and the WWF photos that they were not allowing anybody else to cover their matches at the ring. They would only give them a pass to shoot at a photographer's balcony up above the ring or whatever, and you've got the ropes in the way. And again, I was the one with the exclusive pictures of WWE for the Japanese press only, and one of the magazines worked out a deal with the Japanese press and used one of my pictures on their cover, and that was sort of like the end of my WWF days. It was just a way to get rid of me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The magazines don't pay very good money, so to have that privilege and to you know, sell a $50 cover, that's what I was getting for covers, $50, you know. But you add it all up, and I'm selling with two magazines, it's not bad money. And then I would bill the Japanese, and I knew they were going to get over with me sooner or later, so I had the fake receipt gimmicks. And the broads that I would stay with, and, you know, they had, you know, I'd usually stay, get receipts to say that I was staying at a $50 hotel, because I saw what the Japanese press were doing, and they, when they were covering wrestling, they were renting Lincoln Continentals for one day, they were staying in the most expensive hotels, so I'm figuring, gee, if I could cut those expenses, they're going to really like me. And then you know, I've got the same broad stories or girlfriend stories or whatever that the wrestlers have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was part of that scene back in the early 80s, you know, being able to get, you know, have my fan of girlfriends, you know, in towns. And they would pick me up, and, you know, I'd have the fake receipt for the rental car. And for airfare, and you know, I got the Saturday special airfare, but it was all profit, because they would be driving me, you know what I mean? Or I would just have the 20, you know, the 20, back then Lincoln Continentals were $20, and I would drive it 3,000 miles for the weekend. You know, there was first Louisville, Kentucky on Tuesday, then Evansville on Wednesday, then Memphis on Thursday, and then I'd leave to go to Florida. Bruiser had condos in Florida. On Friday, I'd do stuff at Eddie Graham Auditorium, or whatever I think they called it, in Tampa, Florida. And so there's covering 3-4 wrestling matches a week. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For doing independent wrestling and covering it when it was hot for the Japanese press and whatever Bill Apter would buy. I got to thank Bill Apter, because he's got the Credibility magazine, and that was, you know, having my name credited in his magazine took me a long way, and so it was just the combination of Bill Apter and Wally Yamaguchi and Jimmy Suzuki, and working with all three of them that gave me my chances in the business.
I would argue that Vince McMahon Jr. is the most important person in the history of the business. Have you met Vince McMahon, and do you have any interesting?
Yes, I have. I have on many occasions. As I said, when I would do WWF, I would stay low-key, but since Steve Taylor and I were both photographers at the same time, then he would take me around at the bar and introduce me to everybody. You know, they stayed, it was St. Louis Marriott by the airport, and they had a real nice bar where all the boys would meet and party and hang out in both groups, in both NWA and WWF. And then that's where we would stay that night at the same place. So it's not only the nighttime life of getting to know them, but it's in the morning when you're at the buffet and, you know what I'm saying, and seeing the guys their real selves. And also, I've been on many, many flights with the stars as well, and Mexico and, WWF stars. So, you know, you see them outside and you just sit around and you talk and you tell them who you are, and then you're cool, and, you know, then they leave and you got to start all over, you know.
How many countries have you shot wrestling pictures in? All over the world.
Well, I was the United States, like a United States representative for Gong. So I would, you know, I did all the major territories at one time or another with Gong Wrestling Magazine. I was also sent to Puerto Rico to do what is considered one of the worst angles in the history of the business with Onita and Jose Gonzalez. And that was Puerto Rico, and that was for an angle in Japan. So I did Mexico, all over the United States, and Puerto Rico. I never did do Japan. I had many promises to go down there, but the tickets just never came in.
Okay.
In boxing... And pro boxing, that's a different story. I went to Europe a lot, and my role was to be a babysitter, make sure that the fighter made his way in, tape his hands, and also, when a fighter has a certain record, that is appealing and marketable, then it's what they call cashing in. Now they're going to Europe to fight for big money, and they're being... But they're being knocked out. You know what I mean? Their win record is being deteriorated in lieu of money. And I was used as a mule to bring back half the fighter's money. You know, you're only allowed $10,000 in custom, and I would have usually just right at $10,000 in my underwear and stuck to my ass and crap like that. You know, but that's the truth. I've been detained in customs. I've had guns on me. I've admitted that I've had large things of money. They leave the room. They look at a monitor, which you don't think they're looking at. You stay cool, and then you're let go. You know what I mean? They search your shit, but they never search me. And I admitted I had money on me, but I had the exact limit, which was legal, $10,000, and I've done that many a time. My pay for taking that fighter back and being honest and bringing back every cent would be like $100. But I got a trip to, I got a trip to France out of it. I got a trip to Denmark. I got all my expenses paid for. I got to hang with leaders of foreign countries, you know. And I can't even, if I said some of the people I was able to hang around with and meet in this business and that I'm pictured with, there may be a total investigation. You never know. You know what I'm saying? So what you see is on Facebook is low-key stuff.
Well, boxing's pretty glamorous in its own way. I mean, do you like boxing more than wrestling?
I love boxing. Yeah. I go back and forth from boxing to wrestling. Right now, until the Cauliflower Alley Club And there's nothing right now that really tops the Cauliflower Alley Club off. So I got to get my boxing stimulation last night with Golden Gloves, and I bring the camera and I take pictures. You know, I'm like one of it's a social life for me. I've been doing this stuff for so long. It's like seeing your uncles and brothers and stuff like that, you know, with the trainers and the old-time guys. And the same goes with wrestling. I don't care about the new style. I don't even know who the guys are. I go so I could hope to see one of the old guys that I used to work with hanging around so we could just talk about old times. And there's nothing wrong with it. And that's what I go for.
Staying on boxing for a second, are you interested in the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've got friends that are managing fighters on the undercard. I've been a professional fighter, although I can't fight. That's the whole rib. I never trained in wrestling, and I certainly can't fight, and I've been a pro fighter. My second fight, which I lost to Monty Cox, who is a very famous MMA promoter, I wore leg weights and sweatpants to make the weigh-in to be a heavyweight fighter so I could fight him. It was on the undercard of Hector Macho Camacho. But my referee was the same referee, Gino Rodriguez. His daughter is the virgin who used to come to the shows with him, you know, the Jane the Virgin. And
yeah.
Gino Rodriguez refereed the last Manny Pacquiao fight. He was my referee in my fight, so it had all the makings. We had the big ring announcer, Trevor. We had the great referee. I came in wearing this famous leather Scott Romer photography jacket. Rip Rogers was working my corner, and then the bell rang. Bell rang, and it was over with, you know.
How did the fight go?
I found a soft spot in the ring, you know, to lay down. You know, one thing is, in wrestling and boxing, you know when you've had enough, you know what I mean? And so you wait for that one punch to, you know, I was never a fighter. Again, I had 10 minutes training experience before I went into the ring, you know. That's including the minute, that's including the 30 seconds I lasted with the national champion for my first fight. My first fight was in Hammond, Indiana at the famous Civic Center, 1993. I was 34 years old, and they only told me that it was this guy's first fight. And he was a former national champion, and I just posted it on my Facebook. He was convicted of running one of the largest drug marijuana rings in the United States, and they found millions of dollars buried on his property. I think I sent that to you as part of my resume.
Oh, my God.
Now, working with Japan, and there's no secret to this. There's no secret. You go Japanese wrestling, you type in Yakuza, and Japanese wrestling and the press and their TV stations are all owned, supposedly, by the Yakuza. Now, I didn't know that. So I'm being paid by the Yakuza. I love it. You know, who else could have that story? You know what I mean? There are pictures that I'm posting now that I'm going by, and some of the press photographers that are my good friends and Japanese photographers, I'm looking at their fingers, and their fingers are cut off.
Wow.
You know, Cage, you know, and that's because you disgraced the Yakuza, the gang, the group, and to show your honor, they cut your finger off. I was wondering why everybody had their finger cut off, you know? I'm grabbing people's claws, you know? It's great. Where else could I have this kind of story? You know what I'm saying? But pro wrestling, I love it.
Do you have a favorite event that you look back on your career that you covered?
Well, you know, there are memorable events that I've done. I covered David Von Erich's funeral. And that was one thing that I'll never forget, how they had loudspeakers and there were like 4,000 people waiting outside in addition to the packed church. I went to the Von Erichs' house right after that and did an interview with Fritz and the Von Erich boys, which was published in Gong Magazine. There was a time that I shot a show in Miami at the Orange Bowl, and I was married to Dick the Bruiser's daughter at the time, and here she is dressed to kill, you know, with these $1,000 leather outfits. That's why I had to get rid of her, was because of the expenses of her. She was a great girl, but had to have $1,000 outfits, you know what I mean? And I'm just a beer and a beer and peanuts type of guy. But we were at. She was wearing her Louis Vuitton purse. They had this big show. Eddie Graham. This was just before Eddie Graham died. Orange Bowl Parade of Champ. Nah, that was Texas. But anyhow, she was mugged, and they took her purse, and they found it in the trash, and all her money was gone, and jewelry, and everything. So I remember that. You know, each territory I have a fond memory. You know, I was working with Andy Kaufman when he was actually making the rounds. His thing with Jerry Lawler wasn't he was doing that routine at lots of places.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you knew that. He was teaming with Jimmy Hart, and then him and Jimmy Hart would get into it. And so he did a whole thing, and then he got sick and died. And it's people like that. You know, he used to wait for me at the wrestling shows. He was like kayfabe, so they really didn't like him hanging around downstairs. And then he waited for Scott Romer to come because he knew he was going to take pictures. And he would always ask me if I had pictures from the last show. And, you know, Andy Kaufman was a good guy, you know, for the few times that I met him.
Scott, who was your favorite wrestler to cover over the years in your career?
Well, I would have to say Dick the Bruiser. But at the beginning of Hulkamania and the way they marketed that, and, you know, I would be able to walk, you know, in front or in back of Hulk as he made his ring entrance, and to have all those people cheering at the same time, the goosebumps and the feeling and the enthusiasm I had of wanting to capture every moment of that scene. I mean, that was an incredible thing. You know, you had Brody. If you followed him, there's a chance you could get hurt by a fan. You know what I mean? They're throwing things. He's swinging chairs. The Sheik chased me around. You know what I mean? So there's, but I treasure those men. I treasure every moment. Whatever they did, I treasured. You know what I mean? Deep down inside, those were my idols, and they could do no wrong unless they tried to cheat me.
Now, you have been in this business for over 30 years taking photographs. The photography business has changed. It's incredible with digital photography and all the advancements. What are some of your favorites? Do you like how photography's changed, or do you still prefer, you know, using a regular camera like
you? Well, you know, by hearing me talk, I'm old school. So I'm an old school guy that has barely crossed the line to digital. I could do it. Do you see my pictures touched up and really fancied out and stuff like that? You don't see a lot of that. You know what I mean? I've got a small staff of people that come and you know, do any kind of photo corrections on the pictures that I want to pay to have done. You know what I mean? But I have made a transition with the film to digital. Everything now that I have is digital, and I make my living. I make my living as an instant photographer, going to events and producing instant pictures at events like awards banquets. And, you know, I was doing it at the Cauliflower Alley Club, except nobody wanted to buy a picture. You know, I think, you know, the last year I sold less than 7 pictures bringing all that equipment. So, you know, and I'd give the wrestler $5, so it's a win-win situation. A $20 8x10, the wrestler signs it, I give the wrestler $5, and you know, and then I break my equipment carrying it there, and it costs me $300 to fix, and I made less than $100, and a typical wrestling thing, you know. I'm probably the biggest mark there ever was. But this year we're going to cover the events, and, you know, the Cauliflower Alley Club will get their set, and they'll archive it, and I'm sure they'll appreciate it. And the publisher of the Ear, Eric Schimmel, is very, very good at giving everybody credit. So I don't play the games. I know 2 years ago everybody had an official Cauliflower Alley Club ribbon, official photographer ribbon, you know, and I didn't, they even asked me, does that bother you? I don't care. You know what I mean? I don't play the politics or the games. I know what I've done in the business. I'll never be able to do it again. And, the Cauliflower Alley Club gives me the residuals of past memories, you know?
Sure, sure. What is left for you to accomplish in your career? What are some of your future goals?
56 years old. I take my life day by day. You know what I mean? As I get older, it's harder to, I think, to make a living. Nobody wants grandpa shooting their weddings and stuff like that. So the maybe it's time to put a little bit of red dye in my hair, slick it back, and look like Dick Clark. But I'm always, I'm constantly trying to reinvent myself in doing new assignments. You know, my reunions are big. I do business and have a good reputation doing high school reunions and photographing them and producing the lab quality prints on site. So that season's going to be coming up. And then I get little gigs in between. I found a boxing show the other day, and I posted a couple pictures in Cincinnati, Ohio. It was a Tucker promotion. Nate Tucker, his brother, was their former world champion, Tony Tucker. There were, if you were lucky, 100 people in the audience. I knew that I wasn't going to sell any 8x10s, so I didn't even get the 8x10 printer out. And I hustled 5x7s at $10 a pop and came out even, you know what I mean? So, you know, I just hope that I'm not a product of like you see in the movie The Wrestler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I'm broke and dreaming of the old days. Sometimes I feel that way, but when I think of those memories, they make me happy. So half my life is doing it and having fun, and the other half is remembering what I did. So I'm screwing my life up in both wrestling and boxing, but that's all right with me because those are great memories, and I'm posting them on Facebook and getting a like here and there. But you won't be seeing me post my best work. You'll be seeing me post pictures of me and pose with somebody, you know what I mean? And it's time right now to get some funds together somehow or another, get my medium format negatives from both boxing and wrestling digitalized, and have these pictures as big poster size pictures for bars and walls and restaurants of the old time wrestlers. That's what I'd like to do, but the funds are short right now, and that's our next goal, is to these pictures have been hidden and never seen before, and it would bring back a lot of memories to the 50 plus crowd when these pictures are displayed at restaurants or in Hall of Fames or in whatever, you know.
Well, Scott, it's been a real honor to have you on OWW Radio today. Please let us know where we can find you on social media. I know you have a website, scottromerphoto.com, correct?
Right. You know, I do that and Facebook. You know what? I waste my life on Facebook. So that's where you're going to see my work and my experiences. I really should be saving all that stuff up for a book, an autobiography. Again, that's part of the what we need funds for. So if anybody wants to do a book on me, and you help me out with a GoFund, let's do it. David, you'd be the perfect one to be the forward and author. Let's do it. We could travel around, sign autographs, make money. And that's another thing, is it, what makes the wrestling and boxing fun are the people you get to hang around with. And from Cauliflower Alley Club, I always liked your style and your class. And, you know, that's few and far between in both wrestling and boxing, you know what I'm saying?
Well, again, it's been a real honor to have you on the radio show today. Thank you so much for joining us. Continued best wishes in 2015, and I will see you in a matter of weeks.
Thanks, David. Looking forward to seeing you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thanks again to Scott Romer for today's insightful interview. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.